From Phillipsburg to Fraser, Latrobe to Grantham, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, job-killing environmental regulations are on the horizon in Pennsylvania, while in Virginia, a new governor is returning to more rational, science-based policies. Gregory Wrightstone from the CO2 Coalition is here with details. Pennsylvania is again one of the top states in the nation for lawsuit abuse, with the state Supreme Court leading the way. We talk with Kurt Schroeder from the Coalition for Civil Justice Reform. And the expanded health care provisions in that so-called Build Back Better bill are more of a payoff to insurance companies than health care for Americans. So says Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Gregory Wrightstone from the CO2 Coalition in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. There were several major political developments in Penn's Woods this past week. First, Jake Corman, who serves as president pro tempore of the state Senate, announced he will not seek re-election to the center county seat he has held for the past 20 years. Corman is an announced candidate for governor and said he will concentrate all of his efforts on winning the Republican nomination. He is one of over a dozen candidates seeking that nomination, including State Senator Scott Martin of Lancaster County, who officially entered the race last Saturday. Acting Pennsylvania Health Secretary Allison Beam has announced she will be leaving her post at the end of the year. Beam will be replaced by Kira Kleinpeter as the Commonwealth continues to struggle with containment of the COVID-19 pandemic. Beam was a calming presence at the Department of Health following the controversial tenure of former Health Secretary Rachel Levine, who resigned a year ago to take a post in the Biden administration. It is crunch time in the process of drawing new congressional and legislative district maps in Pennsylvania. State House lawmakers cast the first vote on congressional district maps this past week. They faced the daunting task of eliminating one seat as the state's population growth failed to keep pace with the rest of the country. New congressional and legislative district maps must be in place by mid-January to meet deadlines for candidates to compete in the scheduled May primary. It is likely any maps approved by the legislature or by the Legislative Redistricting Commission will be challenged in court. And finally, some good news. Revenue collections have yielded a surplus of over $1 billion as the state nears the halfway point of the fiscal year, but don't expect a tax cut, as one-time federal funds designed to combat the impact of COVID-19 have kept the state budget afloat. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Virginia Governor-elect Glenn Youngkin says he will pull that state out of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGI, as the compact is an ineffective, job-crushing approach to reducing carbon emissions. But in Pennsylvania, it is a different story, as Governor Tom Wolf continues to push a radical environmental agenda over the objections of the state legislature. Here to sort through all this is Gregory Wrightstone. Greg is executive director of the CO2 Coalition and author of the best-selling book, Inconvenient Facts. Greg, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Greg, we're going to talk about how Pennsylvania and the Commonwealth of Virginia, both commonwealths, but going in opposite directions when it comes to the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. And we have talked about REGI many times on this show, but for those who may not have heard us before or may not remember what the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative is, give us a brief overview, please.
It's a program, they call it cap and invest. You and I would call it cap and tax on CO2 emissions that any particular company can admit. They put a limit or a regional cap on CO2 emissions, and then you have to buy, I guess if we were back in the Martin Luther area, they would be called indulgences for your sins. These would be basically taxation on your emissions. So instead of being taxed on our sins, we're being taxed on our sins of emissions, if you'll pardon the phrase there. The goal here is to make electricity generated from natural gas and coal more expensive. That's really the objective. And what it does is tilt the playing field towards wind and solar. Because once you make these other electricity generation sources from coal and natural gas more expensive, of course, that by extension makes wind and solar electricity more attractive economically. So their goal is to move the 11 states in the Northeast that are enrolled in RGGI away from coal, natural gas, and towards what they call clean energy of wind and solar. But what it really is a regressive taxation scheme. And by regressive, I mean once you cause energy costs to rise, it harms the poorest among us the most, those on fixed incomes, the elderly, the poor, because they can least afford to pay for that increase in energy.
Not to mention the fact that, as you well know, here in Pennsylvania, Greg, we have, particularly in the western part of the state, Indiana, Armstrong, Cambria County, we have a lot of coal-fired power plants, very well-paying union jobs, won't it?
Oh, it will. And they're going around, they're attacking these companies in various ways. There's some new acts in the Clean Water Act that they're trying to increase the regulations so the water discharged from these plants is going to be, they're trying to enforce regulations that will cause them to spend a lot more money to clean up the little bit of water that comes out of these plants, which might actually cause them to close down anyhow. So this is it's really an economically crippling imposition on the states. RGGI itself proudly pounds its chest and pats itself on the back by saying the RGGI member states have decreased their CO2 emissions. Well, we did a study earlier this year on RGGI in Pennsylvania, and David Stevenson, his portion of it, he looked at that. And why did the CO2 emissions in these RGGI states decrease? It was mainly because companies moved out of those states. If you're a high energy consuming and CO2 emitting company, well, why would you stay in New York if you could move to Ohio or West Virginia? You could make your widgets in Cleveland or Columbus just as well as you could in Oneida, New York, and spend a lot less money and pay a lot less for your energy. So what they did was actually, they didn't decrease their emissions, but rather exported those emissions to neighboring states. So in his analysis, in our paper, we found out that actually overall CO2 emissions did not decline, but rather exported. And when you're exporting CO2 emissions, you're exporting jobs along with them.
Well, fortunately for us, the air from Ohio doesn't ever blow into Pennsylvania
and mitigate
the effects. This regional initiative, it involves all these northeastern states. We are in Pennsylvania headed in a more regulatory direction, but in Virginia, a new governor is going to be taking office in just a couple of weeks, Glenn Youngkim. He plans a very different course for Virginia. What are they planning there, Greg?
Governor Youngkin, and I'm calling you from Arlington, Virginia right now from the CO2 Coalition offices in Arlington. And Governor Youngkin, or Governor-elect Youngkin, has pledged to pull Virginia out of RGGI using executive action. According to him, it's a carbon tax that's passed on to ratepayers, is what he says, and he's exactly correct. And according to him, he said it's a bad deal for Virginians, it's a bad deal for Virginia businesses. I promise to lower the cost of living in Virginia, and this is just the beginning. Well, the same is true in Pennsylvania as in Virginia here, that RGGI, that Governor Wolf in Pennsylvania is trying to regulate for Pennsylvania and pull Pennsylvania into it. It's going to be a bad deal for Pennsylvania, just like it's a bad deal for Virginia. And so God bless them. We just signed up with a group. We'll be meeting with Governor Youngkin and his representatives. We at the coalition hope early in the new year to provide support and science to back him up on this, similar to what we did in Pennsylvania. I think our paper, and you can go to the CO2 Coalition website, which is co2coalition.org, and just search for RGGI, RGGI, at our website to find our paper. We're quite proud of it. I was a lead author on that. And you can learn there how Governor Wolf was just, he's either misguided or lying when he promotes the causes for why we need RGGI. he's just flat out wrong. And he's using, he doesn't follow the science at all. He's following misinformation and presenting that misinformation as truth to the citizens in order to pass this economically crippling bills and Reggie for Pennsylvania.
We are talking with Greg Wrightstone, who is the executive director of the CO2 Coalition. We've been talking so far about the regional greenhouse gas initiative, Pennsylvania and Virginia going in opposite directions, Pennsylvania more regulation, Virginia less regulation. You mentioned misinformation that Governor Wolf spreads. The president of the United States this past week, Greg, has been spreading a lot of misinformation. Tragically, we had a severe tornado in Kentucky. Our hearts, our thoughts, and prayers go out to the victims, their families, and those trying to recover in Kentucky. But the president is blaming this on climate change. Are we having more and more severe tornadoes because of climate change?
No, just the contrary. The facts, the science, and the data do not support that. Rather, the actual reporting and capturing, since we started using Doppler radar, because now with Doppler, that occurred in 1995. It was when we first, now with Doppler, starting in 1995, we can capture and identify every single tornado in the United States accurately. Before 95, you could not do that. We had to rely on reports. Someone had to witness the tornado touching down. If you look at the data from 1995 on, severe tornadoes have been in decline, completely opposite of what Joe Biden has said. And that's what we see with severe weather. We did an expose on this tornado lie of Joe Biden's on Sunday. I've got another one I'm preparing right now on a severe weather lie that's being put out by the World Meteorological Organization. In the same manner that they're lying about the tornado increase, they're lying about severe weather. It's the tornado damage, it was horrific, but to politicize this and to use the deaths and destruction to try and promote your Build Back Biden initiative and to spend $3.5 trillion to fix a non-existent problem, I don't know what you would call it, but just rank politicization of tragedy. They should be ashamed of themselves for doing this.
Well, it is a mantra of the left that no tragedy or difficult situation should go untapped to advance an agenda. Greg Wrightstone at the CO2 Coalition, and you've put a lot of information out there today, Greg. There is certainly volumes more. If we have listeners who would like to learn more, tell us a bit about the CO2 Coalition, what you do, and where folks can go to get accurate scientific data when it comes to climate-related issues.
I like to think of the CO2 Coalition as the tip of the spear in terms of advancing scientific, accurate knowledge about climate change and energy. And you can learn more at co2coalition.org. Go take our climate quiz there. See how much you really know about climate change. We have another section. It's called Climate Facts. And you can learn very easily understandable charts and discussion on various issues. You can learn about polar bears that are increasing in population. Go look at long-term CO2 and temperature and how it is disconnected. There's a lot of good information, so co2coalition.org. And if you're interested in my recently best-selling book that Candace Owens has recently promoted, saying it transformed everything she believes about climate change, that's Inconvenient Facts. You can get that at Amazon.
Greg Wrightstone of the CO2 Coalition. A lot of inconvenient facts out there, but actual science taking place here. Greg, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
We turn now to Kurt Schroeder, who is executive director of the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform. There's a new report out, and once again, Pennsylvania, one of the worst states in the country when it comes to our judicial system. Kurt, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Loman. Thanks for having me.
What is the nature of the problem here, Kurt? Why is Pennsylvania considered to be one of the worst states when it comes to lawsuit abuse in the whole country?
One of the big problems, Loman, is we have too many judges and justices who think that they are legislators. In other words, too much legislating from the bench is occurring. And the problem there, of course, is that it's not the role of a judge to legislate from the bench. It's the role of the judge to follow the written law and interpret clearly written statutes as they are plainly read and were meant to be interpreted by the legislature. So we have activist courts, and that results in a continuing expansion of liability exposure in Pennsylvania. You need to have a dependable liability system, one that is constant, not one that is subject to a judge's or a particular court's whims and can all of a sudden impose liability on you that you never saw coming under the law. So that's one of the big problems, the constant expansion of liability exposure in this state.
What impact does that have, Kurt, when we're always talking about wanting to get businesses to move into Pennsylvania or to expand their operations here? If somebody's looking to do that and they see a climate like this when it comes to the judiciary, what impact does that have?
Certainly the judicial climate of a state is something that businesses consider when they are looking to locate, when they are looking to expand their businesses that are already in Pennsylvania, or perhaps they're deciding to leave for greener pastures elsewhere where there's a more predictable legal climate. So it has a dilatory effect on businesses and, you know, the expansion of jobs in Pennsylvania. It also has a very harmful impact on our health care in Pennsylvania.
One of the courts that has been cited by the American Tort Reform Foundation for taking us in a direction where we have this abuse of our legal system is the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. Can you elaborate a little bit, Kurt, on why and what this court has done to earn that very dubious distinction?
Since 2016, the organization I represent, the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform, we have tracked Supreme Court cases that have been handed down that impact civil liability. And what we have found is that the Supreme Court has engaged in a rampant expansion of liability exposure, cases that allow for higher damages, cases that make it easier to be sued and to be subjected to civil liability. So the ratio of those cases is 2.6 to 1. In other words, 2.6 cases expanding liability to every one case that they held the line and recognized existing limitations on litigation and recognized and upheld the law as it was intended to be.
Another court that was cited in the report, the Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas, and this brings into play the whole issue of venue shopping. What is it with the Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas that makes it an attractive place for folks who want to file these lawsuits to want to have their suits heard there?
What we have are plaintiff's attorneys who engage in what's known as venue shopping. In other words, the injury that they're suing over, the personal injury, might have occurred out in Montgomery County, Bucks County, Lancaster County, even Harrisburg maybe. But if there is some tangential connection to Philadelphia with one of the parties or defendants, they'll file the lawsuit there in Philadelphia instead of the county where it really should have been filed. And the reason they do that is because they know that there is a jackpot mentality in the Philadelphia court system. The Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas, if you look at medical malpractice, medical liability verdicts in general, by far and away, they have the most number of million-dollar-plus verdicts and verdicts that often go nuclear. Plaintiffs' attorneys want to be in the Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas because what does that mean to them? Well, that means a bigger payday. That means their contingency fee that they're charging the injured party that they might represent, they'll take 30 to 40% of that. So if you have a nuclear verdict, you're going to have a substantial payday in the Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas. But what that does is that encourages what we call litigation tourism. Right now, if you look at the number of cases, mass tort cases in the Philadelphia Complex Litigation Court, 85% of those are out of state. They're in Philadelphia to take advantage of the court system and their overly generous verdict reputation.
Now, there are some potential rule changes that are in the mix that could make this bad situation even worse. What's happening there?
Ever since about 2003, Pennsylvania had tamped down and stopped forum shopping in one area, and that was medical liability. That was done in response to the medical liability crisis of the early 2000s, where it was determined that one of the big factors driving up the cost of medical liability and making doctors reduce services, reduce high-risk services, maternity wards close, it was an awful time for health care and access to health care. But it was determined that one of the big problems was this forum shopping of all of these cases from all across the state being brought in Philadelphia because of the jackpot verdicts plaintiff's attorneys try to earn. So we've had that under control. Now, all of a sudden, there's a proposal before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court's Civil Rules Committee to change that. They want to revert back to the old ways before 2003, which would allow forum shopping to return in medical liability cases and allow the Philadelphia courts to be flooded once again with medical malpractice cases from all across the Commonwealth. And that will drive up the cost of medical liability insurance. It will impact the practices of physicians and hospitals, and will have a really terrible impact on your access to health care in this state if we allow that to happen.
We have again been talking with Kurt Schroeder, who is Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform. Kurt, tell us a little bit about the coalition. Also, where can folks go on the web if they would like to learn a bit more about this topic?
Well, the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform is a statewide, nonpartisan organization. And to find out more about us, we can be found at our website, which is www.paforciviljusticereform.org.
Kurt Schroeder, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Coalition for Civil Justice Reform. Kurt, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Loman.
Planned expansion of health care in the proposed Build Back Better bill are costly and inefficient. We get details from Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Now that Congress has passed and President Biden has signed their $1 trillion physical infrastructure legislation, they're on to the next spending spree, the multi-trillion dollar Human Infrastructure Build Back Better Act. While we continue accountability efforts on the bipartisan infrastructure bill, sending scores of patch-through calls into the offices of our 20-member federal delegation and knocking doors to ensure constituents of U.S. Representatives Fitzpatrick, Lamb, Cartwright, and Wild know that they voted for this outrageous spending, we're working with urgency to educate members and constituents on the most harmful provisions of this latest legislation under consideration by Congress. The Biden administration is on defense. Just last week, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki called the Congressional Budget Office score of BBB fake. But just as Senator Lindsey Graham noted, $3 trillion would indeed be added to the deficit over the next decade if the social spending provisions were made permanent. And we all know that when the ball gets rolling in Washington on a new program or entitlement, it's near impossible to stop. One of the most harmful provisions in the Build Back Better bill would force taxpayers to shell out $47,000 per year for each new Medicaid and Obamacare enrollee. That's 2 to 4 times what a private health insurance policy costs, at roughly $12,000 to $25,000 a year on average. Why? Well, one, government programs are inefficient compared to the private sector at the best of times. Two, the bill wastefully steers billions of taxpayer money to wealthy households and able-bodied working adults who don't need the help. And three, the subsidies are structured to be highly inflationary, as they would drive up the overall cost of health insurance by giving insurers a strong incentive to drive up the price of their offerings in the Obamacare exchanges. According to the CBO, the bill's health care provisions would cost taxpayers $553.2 billion, which would result in about 3.9 million Americans obtaining health insurance coverage at a cost of $47,000 per person per year. Yet in a real sense, the bill is more of a subsidy for big insurance than an actual form of health care access for real people. The bill includes several provisions designed to increase health insurance coverage that are wasteful in nature. It expands federal premium subsidies for Obamacare plans to well-off households earning up to $500,000 a year. It allows people to enroll in federally subsidized Obamacare plans, even if they already have access to affordable employer-sponsored insurance. It makes about 4 million able-bodied childless adults eligible for Obamacare subsidies in a dozen states that have opted not to expand Medicaid. And most of these adults already have access to employer-sponsored insurance or other government-subsidized coverage. And last, it allows anyone with unemployment to get taxpayer health subsidies. As Dean Clancy, a senior fellow for health policy at Americans for Prosperity, put it, there's no way around it. The health care provisions of Build Back Better are bloated and misguided. They cannot be fixed. You know, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer can't lose a single vote of his 50 members to achieve a favorable report of Build Back Better from the chamber. It's up to all of us to continue beating the drum that this will assuredly do more harm than good. Join us by visiting AmericansForProsperity.iVolunteers.com. There are just a few days left before members return home for the holidays. Let's ensure that they leave D.C. and leave the Build Back Better plan behind, too. From our Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania team to you and yours, we wish you a very Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and a prosperous new year. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. Find us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRXV-FM in Hollidaysburg, WRWV in Lockhaven, along with WRPV-FM in Clearfield, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
Thank you.